of the Hammer. We'd like to welcome you all to the House Special Fisheries Committee for our first hearing of the 2010 session. Present at the committee are Representative Munoz, Representative Book, Vice Chair Keller, Representative Kawasaki. We have a couple other members that will be here shortly. The time is approximately 10:12, and today is January 26th, 2010. As always, before a committee hearing, we'd ask those of you in attendance to keep your cell phones, put them on silent, if you would, please. And today we will be hearing House Bill 227, which deals with the Hulitna River Reserve. And our intent is to hear the bill and to set it aside for probably a hearing or two and allow for any further public testimony to come forth that we might need. And we will, as a matter of practice throughout the session, I should say, try to end the meetings at the top of the hour at 12. But given that we may be involved in testimony or whatnot, I will exercise the right to continue on to 12:15 and make it even 2 hours duration for the meeting. So with that, any comments or questions from committee members? Not hearing any, let's begin with Representative Herron and House Bill 227. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, Representative Bob Herron from the Kuskokwim. Mr. Chairman, this bill was introduced after several years of working on it by not me, but residents of the region, specifically around Sleipmute. The Hulitna Basin for many years was a breadbasket for the region, and for a number of reasons the breadbasket is no more, and it's been closed to hunting for the last 5 years. And so as you've seen in the backup, and then I'll have Rob or my staff give you a brief overview of it. It is the intent to manage the fish and game and all other animals in the region, in the basin, excuse me, for enhanced human consumption. It is truly an area of the state, very remote, that can provide food for the tables for Alaskan residents. So that, with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd ask Rob to give a brief overview of the entire bill.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Herron. Rob, do you want to come forward? And I guess I should note while you're getting situated that we do have a sponsor substitute in front of us, and according to my staff's notes, we do not need to have formal adoption of a sponsor substitute, but just for the committee's edification, that's the bill that that we currently have in front of us. Representative Johnson, welcome you to the table.
Apologize for my tardiness, Mr. Chairman.
No problem. Mr. Earl?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Rob Earl, staff to Representative Herron. As Representative Herron stated, HB 227 would create the Hulitna River Basin Hunting, Fishing, and Trapping Reserve. And first of all, we appreciate the chairman scheduling this bill at this time because HB 227 is slated to be discussed at the Boards of Game and the Board of Fish this same week. Residents have been requesting the Hulitna drainage be established as a refuge since the mid-1980s. It is the largest drainage feeding the Kuskokwim watershed and is prime habitat for moose, bear, caribou, and fur bears. It is also an important area for all species of salmon, about a quarter of the coho, a third of the chinook and chum, and two-thirds of the sockeye running the Kuskokwim spawn in the region. I'd like to do a little geographical overview. You have three maps in your packet, and they're also on bases. The first map shows the watershed of the Hulitna in red, and this is the proposed boundary of the reserve. This is mostly state-owned land within the watershed. There's some big mining claims out west here, but limited development there, little exploration. This is Wood Chick Chick State Park coming in from the southwest. budding the boundary there. There are some small native allotments, mostly up in this northern region. And this northern part of the reserve is generally low wetlands, and the central and southern portions become a little more hilly with a high point of about 4,000 feet. The 165-mile-long Hohelitna flows in from the east here into the 110-mile-long Hohelitna, and together they empty 20 miles further on into the Kuskokwim. Sleetmute, the village of Sleetmute, is right up here at the confluence of the Hohelitna and the Kuskokwim. And downstream a ways is Red Devil. And upstream is Stony River. And then further up the Stony River is Lime Village. None of these villages have more than 100 residents. Historically, the area has been used by hunters and fishers from about 23 villages, and most access is by boat and by small plane to lakes or remote landing strips. The total proposed area of the reserve is about 4 million acres, or 6,250 square miles. That is slightly less than the land area of the Hawaiian Islands. This area lies entirely within Woody Salmon's house district. This second map with just the outlines here. This is just in the interest of full disclosure. This shows a boundary issue we're trying to sort out. The blue boundary here is the same as on the first map. It's the watershed boundary. And this is the proposed boundary on page 2, line 2 of the bill. The second boundary in pink is the legal description at the end of the bill. And the orange boundary is the management area 15. So it's a little internally inconsistent at this point. We're trying to sort this out. One idea would be to make the boundary the same as management area 15, with the possible exclusion of some area in the north there to take out Sleetmute.
If we could pause for a second to Mr. Earl and just recognize that Representative Millett has joined the committee.
I apologize for being late.
Good morning, Therese.
Good morning.
The third map, this shows the game management unit areas. It's just to show that the basin is within area 19A and 19B. You can see the Hohelitnas here and the Hohos here. So it's roughly this area. DNR's Kuskokwim area plan is in your packet, and it calls for multiple use management of the area with an emphasis on protection of fish and game habitat for subsistence, commercial, and personal use. So the bill is in line with how the area is being already used. HB 227 does not change any existing hunting, fishing, or trapping regulations. And furthermore, it would not prevent any activities currently allowed on state-managed lands, nor would it override any existing management authorities or affected state agencies, nor would it change the access that is currently allowed in the region unless any of these activities conflicted with the purpose of the bill, which is to rebuild or enhance fish and wildlife populations in the area. I think Kevin Saxby from Department of Law should be online. He's a natural resource expert that also works with fish and game. And Dick Miles from Division of Land and Water should be online. So with that, I could go over the sectional analysis if you like.
We can pause for a second, see if there's any questions from committee members for either the bill sponsor or staff. Not the Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'd like to back up a little bit. I noticed we have a sponsor substitute, and my staff kind of went through and pointed out some difference. But if you could kind of go and tell me the difference in the original bill and the sponsor substitute, the key differences that exist in that, that might help me know where we are from where we were at the end of last year.
Maybe I'll preface it, Representative Johnson, and Rob could explain some of those. Essentially, it was introduced late in the session last year. There was no time to work, really to do anything in committee. And so I went to the Department of Natural Resources and Fish and Game and sought their input. And basically, and Rob can explain those, basically those were the changes. Initially, the first draft, which is legislation that was pending for a couple years, though never introduced, pending for a couple years when Mary Nelson was a legislator. And the concern was is that DNR didn't want Fish and Game to trump them, and Fish and Game didn't want DNR to trump them on their appropriate authorities. And so we changed the language where if it's a DNR authority issue, they would consult with Fish and Game. If it was a Fish and Game authority issue, then they would consult with DNR. There may be a couple other smaller details, but essentially that's the difference.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So with that, maybe we can go through the sectional and give the committee a better sense of what the differences are between the two bills and sort of a breakdown of what's in the sponsor substitute.
I don't really have very well delineated between the two bills.
You want to, Rob, do you want to just put yourself on the record?
For the record, Rob Earl, staff to Representative Herron. Representative Herron gave a pretty good overview of the differences. I can get all the differences to the committee at a later time if you'd like. But I would be happy to go over the sectional analysis if it's the will of the committee.
Not seeing any questions from committee members, please do so.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 162700 states the purpose of the reserve, which is to promote sustainable levels of human consumption of fish and game. And I could mention at this point that this is would be the first reserve created in Alaska. We currently have refuges, which are generally set aside for hunting. The reserve would have an emphasis on intensive management that is not necessarily present in refuges. Section 2710 gives authority to the Board of Fish and the Board of Game, whichever is more appropriate, to adopt regulations designed to conserve fish and game and to carry out the purpose of this purpose as set forth in 700 and 720. 720A delineates the boundary of the refuge as the watershed of the Hoho and the Holitna rivers. 720B states the reserve is established to ensure management and protection of fish and game populations and habitat to perpetuate consumptive uses. To ensure management techniques that promote maximum use with sustained yield to maintain historical levels with human consumptive use as a priority. To maintain fish and game populations, provide for high levels of human consumptive use. And to ensure an allowance for scientific research to determine the effectiveness of management activities in this section. Vis-a-vis human harvest needs. Section 720C, to fulfill the purposes of this section, the Department of Fish and Game, the two relevant boards, shall manage the fish and game resources within the reserve to provide for high levels of human harvest and subject to priorities among the intensively managed areas for which these entities set policy. They shall control predation and adjust predator and prey population ratios through appropriate means. Conduct management actions designed to further the purposes of this section, so long as the appropriate board has not found the actions to be ineffective at maintaining the fishing game populations. And to consider scientific evidence augmented by local environmental knowledge when evaluating management activities. 720D, this says that DNR cannot require land through eminent domain in the area. 20E allows for DNR to regulate access to the reserve. 720F guarantees corridors to private property. 720G, the bill will not disallow entry for development of non-renewable resources unless it's determined that these activities are incompatible with the purpose of the bill. 720H.
Representative Johnson.
Sorry.
Thank you. Is there any development of natural resources that you would consider not compatible with the subject of this bill? Let's just take a mine, for example. Let's just throw it out there. Is a mine compatible with what you've outlined here as fishing game, or oil development, or a wind farm?
Representative Johnson, Representative Bob Heron here is. The area is on the, at least on the west side, has had a history of mining, so mining is not unfamiliar in the region. Anything west of the east of the mountains on the western boundary, it's pretty. The ability to put in a mine is very, very remote. Now, methane gas has a potential in the future. But on the west side of it, there are mines both that are active now, and so obviously the mines can stay there, and they just have to follow the rules as far as mining. But because there's no large scale mines ever predicted for that region, I have two constituents online that have worked on this for a long time, and. Maybe they can address your question as well during their testimony.
And that might be the perfect segue to asking the Department of Natural Resources staff to comment, but I want to ask your staff, Representative Heron, were you done with your analysis, Rob?
There's one more second, but I think Representative Kawasaki might have a question.
I'll wait until you're done.
Okay, let's finish the sectional analysis. We'll go to Representative Kawasaki, then to the DNR staff.
720H just allows for the two departments to exercise their authority in developing a management plan for the area. And then 720I is that 8 pages of legal description for the boundary that will probably be changed.
Representative Kawasaki.
Just to go along the same line of questioning, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the compatibility determination, would DNR just have sole right of refusal then, for especially for the it notes both exploration and development. So if a mining claim in the area, would that now be subject to this bill?
Representative Kawasaki, Representative Bob Heron, is in our conversations with both agencies, and I'd ask those departments to comment on your question, is throughout Alaska, they have these relationships on whatever appropriate authority has a region, and so they work pretty well together. I guess the simpler question is they don't have absolute trumping power. I mean, they really have to be more concerned about the constituents. But I would defer to the departments.
Oh, are you going to bring them on?
So with that, Dick, are you online? Dick Myles with the Department of Natural Resources.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am here.
Good morning, Dick. Do you want to offer your testimony and then in the process maybe respond to some of these questions that have cropped up here in the last few minutes?
Sure. Representative Edgeman and members of the committee, my name for the record is Dick Myles. I'm the director of the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Mining, Land, and Water. I really don't have too much in terms of testimony other than to say that we have worked with the sponsor to address our jurisdictional concerns with the original bill, where it wasn't clear whether or not DNR was issuing permits or when we were and what Fish and Game was doing. So we think the legislation has improved, clarified that. We don't have a position on the bill itself. We do have some concerns, and that is in terms of how mineral development, oil and gas development, and forestry uses might be fit into this area. Representative Herron said, most of the mineralized lands are to the west, but there are some mining claims in this area. There's also been some interest in oil and gas exploration, although the geologically it's considered an oil and gas basin, but the resource experts think it has pretty low potential, but it's largely unexplored, so you never know. And then forestry, there's a fair amount of local use of some of the timber resources for like firewood and such. We think it'd be helpful to be a little more clear as to the intent of the how those uses would be accommodated. And then our other concern is, as the sponsor mentioned, there is an issue of better defining the boundary to be easier to show on state land records, because the current watershed boundary, it would be real difficult for us to actually enter into state land records. But we've been talking to the sponsor about some options to deal with that issue. And with that, I can take any questions you might have.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Dick, for being online. Question on the main part of the bill, the Section G entry upon the new reserve. It notes specifically for the purpose of exploration and development. So can you comment as to how you would interpret that? Would it mean that folks that were to explore would have to come with you or come with the, what they intended do there? I guess it seems like sort of a chicken before the egg. If we're just exploring, they're just exploring for oil and gas or for, I don't know, timber or whatever.
Representative Kawasaki, under existing state, this doesn't actually change any of the existing requirements in terms of permitting. So for certain types of exploration activities, for example, if somebody's just going out to look at rock outcroppings or with their rock hammer, for example, for minerals to pick at things, they don't even need a permit from us. And if they want to stake mining claims, that's also self-initiated. We don't make a decision. People just file a claim and then come in. For more extensive exploration activities, whether it's for oil and gas or for minerals, they do need permits from us. So, and we already do consultation with Fish and Game in terms of those permits, so it really doesn't change a whole lot. The one resource that is a little bit lacking in that description would be timber, which is actually a renewable resource. The main issue up there for timber is really just local timber, harvest for firewood and such. But there is a fair amount of timber resources in the lower part of the basin there.
Follow up, Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson, did you want to ask any specific questions in the vein of your earlier question of the bill sponsor, of the department staff?
Oh, so many, but not right now.
I can see your finger kind of twitching over there, so I know you're
when
gearing up.
When it stops is when you're in trouble.
Okay. Well, with that, Dick, it sounds like you don't have any additional comments, and if you could stay online, we'd appreciate that, because there may be a comment or two that crops up. But I'd like to go to the Department of Law, Kevin Saxby, and ask if you have any comments on the bill or wish to address any of the questions that have come up.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any comments. I'm available to answer questions if there are specific questions.
Okay. Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you. Thanks, Kevin. Can you explain the differences between a reserve or a general use area and a refuge? I know we've gone through it a couple times. I just doesn't stick.
There are refuges in the state, and they're areas that are set aside by the legislature primarily for protection of fish and game habitat, and they're areas where traditionally hunting and fishing are one of the preservation of hunting and fishing opportunities are one of the underlying purposes. A reserve, this would be the first time the legislature had created a hunting or fishing reserve, or a fish or game reserve, however you choose to call it. So it's really up to you to decide what the differences are. But the way this bill is written, the difference would be that there would be a greater emphasis on active management to produce high levels of human consumptive use. It's not just a place where you allow hunting and fishing to continue or preserve that as an ongoing activity. It's a place where you are really encouraging the administration to manage for high levels of that activity. It's analogous to a state forest, like the Tennenaw Valley State Forest that legislators may be familiar with, where forestry is, production of timber is the primary identified purpose in the statutes.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Saxby from the Department of Law? Not seeing any or hearing any. We do have a number of folks online. And I would like to go to at this point begin our public testimony portion of the hearing by going to Doug Carney with the Stony Holt Advisory Committee Commission. Are you online, Doug?
Hello.
Yes. Good morning.
Hello.
Yeah. Can you identify yourself for the record, please, and begin your testimony?
Yeah.
My
name is Doug Carney. I'm chairman of the Stony Hill Litna Fish and Game Advisory Committee. I've lived out here in this area most of my life. And the Halitna, a lot of this has been covered already, but the Halitna drainage is the largest tributary of the Kuskokwim watershed. And it's different than most areas because you have the Halitna and Halitna running roughly north-south and parallel to each other for many, many miles, and you have a wider, up to as wide as 35 miles in some places of good habitat for fur bears, moose, bear, and then there's the wetlands that for waterfowl and nesting in the area too. And then, as it was pointed out already, it's the largest tributary, is the most productive spawning stream that contributes to large the lion's share of the spawning for the Kuskokwim drainage for salmon, a couple species of whitefish, and it's great habitat for sheafish also. This has become more evident in the radial telemetry studies that Department of Fish and Game and Kuskokwim Native Association have done, particularly with salmon and the whitefish in these last years. Where most rivers in this part of the state especially, you just have a very narrow area of habitat and trees going through tundra. This is the exception here. And in past years, when up until the late 90s, we had large moose were taken out of here every year, large numbers of moose, 350, 400 moose taken out of it every year. It continued that way for years. People here rely on it for subsistence use for salmon and moose are the biggest things that they rely on. We'd like to, like as we said, see it preserved and managed for high levels of consumptive use, and that's what we're looking at, and that's why the Stony Advisory Committee, and we were formerly part of the Central Kuskokwim Advisory Committee. We always supported this. When the Village of Sleepy Traditional Council and ONC had proposals in front of the Board of Fisheries and Board of Game for this, for them to get support of this idea of this this reserve, so we hope you do pass it and it goes into effect because it's a sensitive area and it's the most productive and. A lot of people all up and down the Kuskokwim rely on it, particularly for fish. That's about all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Carney. Are there any questions for Doug? Not seeing any. Thank you for your time this morning, and we'll move next to the Sleep Mute Council. I've got several names here, so we'll start first with Lisa Furson. Lisa, are you online? And if you are, can you identify yourself for the record, please?
Hi, I'm Lisa Farries, and I'm the Tribal Administrator at Sleep Mute Traditional Council, and currently I'm here with Pete Malik, the Tribal President. And we just wanted to reiterate what Doug had mentioned. And I guess one of the things that may, when you look at the river drainage, it's not always just what goes down the river, what comes up the river, but what goes back down. The salmon that spawn in the Holitna drainage don't only affect the Kuskokwim River, but as they go out to the sea, the whole Bristol Bay area, when they're coming back 2 to 3 years later, that affects the whole commercial fishing industry, which is the livelihood of many people in the region. And because it's such a large contributory to the spawning of the salmon, we feel it's essential to put in some protection. The other thing that is important to realize is that our economy right now is in such desperate need out here that we are relying more heavily than ever in the past on our subsistence way of life. And, you know, as the moose population decreases and the oil prices increase, it's critical that we protect and preserve every bit of our subsistence way of life as we can. I guess that's all I really wanted to comment on.
Thank you. Was there anyone else at the site who wanted to testify this morning on House Bill 227? Anyone else in sleep mute?
Not right at this time, no.
Okay. Well, thank you all for your interest in the legislation. Thank you for your testimony, Lisa. Next, we will go to Antioch and Mike Thelhauster. Are you there?
Hello.
Good morning. Can you identify yourself for the record, please, and provide your testimony?
Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
Hi. Thanks. Mike Tallhauser here. For the record, I'm the fisheries director at the Kuskokwim Native Association Fisheries Department. At the Kuskokwim Native Association in Antioch, we represent 11 villages along the Kuskokwim River, and as a department, we've actively cooperated with the Department of Fish and Game on several salmon escapement monitoring projects, basically what Doug was talking about with the telemetry studies, and as well with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on several research projects looking at different whitefish species, several whitefish species. And one of the things that we've learned through this research is that the Holitna River provides much of the habitat and production for all these species. And with that, the subsistence opportunities for the entire Kuskokwim River. Through these studies, we've learned that about a quarter of the Chinook, Chum, and Coho salmon that we tagged through these studies and looking at in-river abundance were headed for the Holitna, and about 50% of the sockeye that we tagged. In addition to that, the very few identified spawning areas for humpback whitefish and for Lee Cisco are located in the Holitna River, and it provides the most significant feeding area for shefish on the Kuskokwim. And in short, I guess I'd just like to say that Holitna plays a very significant role in the Kuskokwim River's fish populations, and with that, the people's lives that have and still do depend on them. And with that, I'd just like to give my full support to this bill and to the protection and the support that it gives to our resources and to our people. And thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Any questions for Mr. Thelhauser? Not seeing any. Thank you for your testimony, Mike. Do we have anyone else online who wishes to testify on House Bill 227? Anyone that we might not have identified on our list here at the committee table?
Yeah, we're in Bethel here.
Yes, go ahead and please identify yourself for the record and provide your testimony.
My name is Grant Fairbanks, and I'm testifying from Bethel.
Go ahead, Grant.
The Holitna watershed is finally getting the recognition that is needed to help Western Alaska's breadbasket river watershed remain viable and healthy ad infinitum. Since 1973, that's 36 years, I have been to 9 hearings, many, many, many meetings, and traveled to Washington, D.C. concerning the importance of this river. The federal government thought so highly of this watershed at one time they tried to make it a wild and scenic river in the 1970s. Since state ownership in the 1970s, hundreds of people through scientific papers, public testimony, and research have indicated the Holetna watershed's importance. This bill will encourage management of the area as it is now being used. For the people of Alaska, the Holetna watershed's highest and best use is the use that is presently going on now. I was a working member of the state's Department of Natural Resource Kuskokwim Area Plan a long time ago. And through this plan, it was recognized that the Holetna watershed's highest and best use to the people of the state was for fish and wildlife habitat. We as stewards of our resources must manage our resources for their best use. This bill will indicate to all that fish and game resource management is the indicated and the best use of this watershed. As you can see, I've been working on this for a long time. I know that river like the back of my hand, and because of the salmon and the moose and the wood and stuff like that, that resource has to be protected for its present use, what we're using it for right now, and we just do not want to see something happen, any type of catastrophe that would take this away. As the lady in Sleetmute said, subsistence is so important now in this economy that if people up and down the Kuskokwim did not have salmon and didn't have moose, it would be very hard. And this bill is just going to try to help keep that the way it is. And I thank you.
Thank you, Grant. Not seeing any questions from committee members. Do we have anyone else in Bethel? Greg Rozichka, are you there?
Yes, I am, sir.
Good morning, Greg. Can you identify yourself for the record and provide your comments on House Bill 227, please?
Yeah, quite honored, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Greg Rozichka. I work as the Natural Resource Director for the Kuskokwim Native Council. I also am the co-chair on the Kuskokwim Salmon Management Working Group, participate in both state and federal advisory committee and advisory council programs. Been working this kind of the front lines of resource management between state, federal, and regional issues for nigh on to 20 years now. I've been involved, of course, in the development of this bill since its inception. We started back about 4 years ago. I'm not sure what level of history you got, because we didn't get online until late here. We got a notice that went out to, I guess, all the legislative offices that this hearing had actually been canceled, and I know that there were other folks in Anchorage and Fairbanks that were ready to testify on this as well, and may have got that message and didn't follow up as we did. We actually asked him to dial in just to make sure, because, and found out that you guys were actually going. We were ready to leave and wouldn't have been here. So, anyway, a couple of questions that have come up regarding this, as far as that I heard to DNR and others earlier on potential effects on continued or potential mining or mineral developments. As stated in the bill there, it certainly can be allowed, but it will elevate the level of consideration that DNR is going to have on the effects on the primary purpose of this bill, i.e. the maintaining the habitat and the fish and wildlife populations that are there. And as far as the, again, the importance, even DNR, that many criticize, are going to find a way to give a permit whenever they can. Actually, in 2006, they came out with their denial for a coal bed methane exploration that was appealed, and the following year denied again, and were eventually taken to court. And the proposal for development was significantly curtailed back. The coal bed methane portion was taken out, and now it's just for natural gas. And on a remand from the court, they have allowed for an exploration there. But twice, because of the extremely sensitive habitat for those spawning and rearing areas that are affected, DNR saw fit twice to deny coal bed methane exploration in the region. In addition, within the Kuskokwim Area Plan, There are large areas within the primary riparian corridor of that river that are actually already been closed and have been for 20 years to any future mining. And so we would look to see those maintained and established more in law. And what perhaps the primary focus on this bill is, again, embedding that proactive management process within the areas as a whole to maintain that productivity for its wildlife populations. And, you know, you have similar special purpose areas in other areas, other sections of the state. Mr. Saxby, you know, mentioned about the forestry. Well, here we'd like to establish that assured protection for the hunting, fishing, and trapping values of an area. You look at 4 million acres as being a huge chunk of land, but in perspective, of course, in the state of Alaska, with the amount of ground they've got, it's not really that much. When you look at Game Management Unit 19, you're looking at 17,000 square miles, which equates out to a little over 11 million acres. We're asking for four of that. In other meetings that I've had at advisory committees and so forth, as we brought this around the state, and it went through the public process with the Board of Game, and there was concern about the amount of state land versus the amount of private lands that were in there. Out of that 17,000 square miles, we're probably looking at about 30 square miles of that being private land or ANCSA lands. I was also on the Board of Game for two consecutive sentences through the late 90s, well, 1996 through 2002, and I was part of the board that established these intensive management areas, and they are quite large. And as mentioned in the sponsor statement here, you know, we look at bringing this into focus for the department's management activities within this area, and it's, the bill is crafted in such a way that other areas of the state could also look at identifying their most productive areas for the department to focus their effort. Those guys are stretched pretty thin, so you want to get the most bang for the buck, and it certainly wouldn't preclude activities from continuing by the general public throughout the rest of the IM areas. But again, that was one of the most positive responses I did get in speaking to the department, you know, about it over the last couple of years, is that's where they're kind of at a, oh gosh, what's the word, in a quandary, in that they're supposed to pursue these IM programs or intensive management programs over such broad areas. So this can help to focus that in as well. I don't know if there's any other questions you guys might have for me. I guess I did want to open that up, and I'll try to do my best to answer them. As far as the development of this bill went, it has gone through a very, very lengthy vetting of the public process. We've had, and actually on December 10 at the Anchorage Advisory Committee meeting, and that fellow would hope to have him on today, and folks out of Fairbanks as well. But they reaffirmed their support of this bill. So it's not just we're trying to protect our own backyard. This bill is crafted so that other areas of the state can also incorporate. One more point I really did want to make, of course, is that right now we do have, and for this and the previous administration, we have had support for these IM programs, or active management programs, but we have no assurance that's going to continue into the future. So whatever we can do to help firm this up and embed some real management to provide for the human harvest needs that are already put in state statute, I think it behooves us to do it. So that I'd try to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Greg. Just working off of memory, didn't the Joint Board of Game and Fish, or maybe it was just the Board of Game itself, didn't either one of those entities render an opinion on this idea? Didn't they come out with a letter of support or a letter of no action? Or, I mean, they took no action. Can you refresh my memory on that?
Well, under the Board of Game, of course, and that's where it was generated from. It started back in January of 06 when there was actually a proposal in front of the board at the statewide meeting to designate the Holitna as a separate game management unit. And in discussions with board members, we saw that pretty much going nowhere. But trying to latch on to, again, something to just... recognize in a very formal way the productivity and importance of this area, we put in the proposal, or to amend the proposal rather than make it a separate game management unit, and we actually did say a refuge at the time. And the board chewed that over, and through the course of those discussions came up with a reserve concept. They put it out as a board-generated proposal for action at their spring meeting for the Interior Region. And at that spring meeting, they did support it in concept and requested the sponsors to work with the staff and Department of Law to come up with some draft legislation for them to continue. So they supported it at that time. That continued through that year, and in the fall of 06, they had some draft legislation in front and supported it again. We had the draft bill recirculated in 07, and the chairman of the board and the DOL review at that time said, this is good, we're happy with it, go forward, you have our blessings. We ran into a rather political mess at the time with the current with our current representative finding out that according to your legislative protocol, since it, the Holitna Basin wasn't really within her district, that it wasn't appropriate for her to sponsor the legislation. And by that time, it was getting mid-session. We tried to contact Mr. Salmon along on this is from villages up within his district as well, and we didn't get any response. There was also coupled in that it got rolled into the Tularik Refuge and the statewide ballot initiative, and just given the late timing on it all, we just kind of said we'll step back from it at the moment and come back at another legislative session. Under the Fish Board, we did have a proposal in place that was put in through the process in also the spring of 06, and they took it up the following year within their cycle. But at the time, since there was no legislation actually under consideration, they tabled it to their Habitat Committee, and that's where it sits to this day. I did go to their work session last fall to, since we do have draft legislation actually introduced, they have at their work session scheduled it for action at the AYK meeting that starts today in Fairbanks, and which we'll be going up for to testify on that along with other fisheries issues. At the work session, they haven't taken formal action, but I did get was very encouraged by their response from the members, but I certainly can't speak for them, and whether they'll go to the point of actually coming out with a letter remains to be seen. But it's kind of a history of the legislative efforts that have gone to date, or as far as the Board of Fish and Board of Game.
Okay. Thank you, Greg. Not seeing, well, Representative Munoz.
For the sponsor, I have just a few questions, if you're ready.
We probably have, does this tie into the subject at hand, or did you?
No, just whenever you're ready,
I have a couple of questions. Okay, great. Let's make the rounds here on the teleconference line. Do we have anybody else in Bethel who wishes to testify?
No, there's no one else here.
Okay. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Is there anyone else online, either from the Fairbanks or Anchorage LIO or elsewhere, who wishes to testify this morning? If not, I would like to ask if there's anybody here in the room who wishes to testify. Not seeing anyone, it'll be the chair's intent to keep public testimony open for the purpose of bringing the bill back, which we will. And with that, Representative Munoz, did you want to address the bill sponsor?
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Heron, and Rob, thank you for presenting the bill today. Are there any areas within this designated or potentially designated area that are actively managed now? Or would this create active management for the first time?
No, they have been actively managed. There are areas in the Holitna Basin since 2004, and it's ongoing today.
Okay. And what does it mean, if I may, to be actively managed? Does that include predator control? If you could tell us what it means to be actively managed in fisheries or game.
If I might, Kevin Saxby from DOL could probably answer that much better than I could.
He's still with us.
I'm here, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Saxby, can you respond to that, please?
Yes, intensive management is actually defined in statute as active management that's designed to produce high levels of high population levels for human harvest, and it specifically statutorily includes both habitat manipulation and predator control. That's for game. For fish, active management or intensive management I wouldn't be able to tell you what that's likely to include, but I can tell you that on both the fish and game side, given the way the bill is written to encourage scientific study, that as with state forests, you would probably expect to see some experimentation done on other means of active management in this area.
Representative Munoz?
Okay, if I may. Are there areas within this potential designated area that are actively managed now? Or intensively managed?
Essentially, the northern half is intensively managed for moose. All of the moose populations in the area have been already identified as populations that are important for intensive management. I should correct what I said. Predator control is going on in essentially the northern half of the area right now. But that's not necessarily a permanent program. That's a temporary program.
Okay, thank you. And this legislation would make that a permanent program, is that correct?
It would not require predator control to be permanent, but it would require that that the area be permanently managed to produce high levels of game and fish for human consumptive use.
Okay.
So other methods such as habitat manipulation, including forestry type manipulation, might be deemed appropriate here in the future.
May I ask another question?
President,
you thank you. And do we know currently what the use of this area is for fish and wildlife consumption by residents outside of this area?
Are you asking me?
Yes. I'm sorry.
I can tell you based on what I've heard in my many years of attending Board of Game meetings what we know. Unit 19B, which is roughly the southern half of the area, is primarily, not exclusively, but primarily used by people who are non-local and is primarily fly-in. Although there is, up to several of the major rivers, there are local users who come up a few miles into the area as well. The northern half of the area is the reverse of that. It's primarily accessed by people who come in by the main rivers on small boats, small craft. This is for hunting, by the way, that I'm talking about. And they're mainly people from downriver and from the villages right there that were described to you at the beginning of the sponsor's statement. So we have two really distinct uses for game, and as has been testified, it's also an important spawning ground for fish.
Mm-hmm. And then just one final question. Would this bill establish a priority for any one particular user group or type of use?
No. This bill establishes production of the fish and game resource as the priority, not a preference for any user group.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Additional questions? Well, we have Mr. Saxby online. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Saxby. On page 2, section C, line 23, where it basically says the Board of Fish and Game shall manage fish and game resources, and it shall control predators. Are you saying that you don't think that means that they must do it?
Well, not if it's not necessary. They would do it if it was... I'm saying the shall manage for abundance is obviously the stated purpose and the mandate, but I wouldn't read this as requiring permanent predator control where that isn't going to do any good. It's for example, if abundant populations are achieved, one of the tools that the department needs to use is often harvest of females in order to maintain the population within its age class, I'm sorry, within its carrying capacity. And so different techniques are appropriate at different levels of abundance, and predator control is appropriate at some, but not necessarily all levels of abundance.
Additional questions, Representative Johnson?
Is there someone from the Department of Fish and Game on as well?
I don't think we have any. I don't think we have anybody on with the Department of Fish and Game, but if we do, can you please come forward and identify yourself?
They don't want to know.
Mr. Chairman, is it your intention to hold this so that we can
yes.
get some of these
yes.
questions answered? Because I'd be very curious to see if the Department of Fish and Game's definition of intensive management is the same as the legal department's definition. We may have a little conflict.
Representative Herron.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, Kevin Saxby, essentially is assigned to work for Fish and Game, and so through this whole process he has been in communication with Fish and Game all along.
I do have some additional questions. It depends on how far you want to go with
well, we have plenty of time. Additional questions on this?
Well it's for Mr. Sachs.
Okay. Before we go to your questions, Representative Johnson, Representative Millett, did you have a question on this point?
I can go.
Okay. Representative Johnson.
Kevin, thank you. How is this compatible with the Constitution where it says basically that all uses should be equally protected from natural resources? Are we really stepping across constitutional boundaries here when we designate this one area for proprietary use over another?
The Constitution actually says in Article 8, Section 4 that that the management of all renewable resources is, quote, subject to preferences among beneficial uses, unquote. So the legislature is authorized, as it has many times in the past, to designate one beneficial use of one type of resource over another beneficial use as the preferred use. You've done that in the state forests, for example, by setting the timber use as the preferred use. You've done that in the game sanctuaries by designating preservation of wildlife habitat as the preferred use and disallowing hunting, for example, in the McNeil River State Game Sanctuary. So the Constitution actually allows you to define what are the preferred uses.
Does the Constitution actually say renewable, or was that your word?
The Constitution says renewable. It says fish, forests, wildlife, and other renewable natural resources. I may not be quoting it exactly word for word, but shall be maintained according to the sustained yield principle, subject to preferences among beneficial uses.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm sorry, it says replenishable, not renewable.
Okay.
I think.
And one other question, and you may not have the answer to this. How will this fit into, or does it affect, the proposed regulations that the Board of Game is contemplating on designated big game areas? Would that exclude this area from allowing the Board of Game to go in and say this is Guide A's area, and this is Guide B's area. Would that
That's the Board of Game isn't doing that. That's, and it's neither is the Big Game Commercial Services Board. That's actually a program that is being looked into by DNR for leasing different areas to different guides, if I'm understanding your question correctly.
And you are, but I thought that DNR made the recommendation to the Board of Game, and then they enacted the, it had to come from the Board of Game.
No, it's vice versa. The Board of Game asked DNR to do it because the Board of Game has no authority to lease state lands.
Okay, so in regardless who's doing it, how would this affect that program?
I don't see it would affect it in any way. It's just another, no more than creation of a state park or creation of a state forest would. There's still an area of land, as long as hunting is allowed, and as long as it's land owned by the state, DNR would be able to include it within its program.
Representative Johnson, did you want the DNR to address your line of questioning?
No, I'm gonna ask this off record when I get a chance to talk to them. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm done.
Representative Millett.
Thank you. Kevin, I have a question about the private, the 165 parcels of private land adjacent to the unit that we're talking about designating. Can you talk to me about section on page 3, line 23, I'm sorry, line 19, to talk about how the access private property takes place? What's the procedure? It says in consultation with the fish and game and private property owner. What's the procedure for the private landowners? Says that you will be guaranteed access through the corridors. Can you just talk to me and walk me through how private landowners are protected under this? If it's just a consultation, it doesn't sound like they get much input.
It says it shall be guaranteed. As far as the specific process for working with DNR, I'm not very familiar with that. Perhaps Dick Milius might be able to tell you more. What I can tell you is that this is language that's nearly identical to other reservations the legislature's already created. So it's a process that's already in place and being done.
Yeah, Mr. Milius, can you come back on the record and address that question before we go to Representative Keller?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Again, this is Dick Milius. Throughout it uses the word language or consultation. In the case of the planning, it's DNR consulting or fish and game consulting with DNR, and the other time it's the other way around. It basically just requires that we get comments from them, but the decision maker, and if it says DNR in consultation with fish and game, then DNR is clearly still the decision maker. If it says fish and game in consultation with DNR, then it's the other way around.
Representative Keller?
Am I right in understanding this section? That was a good question, and one I had also, by the way, is protecting the private landowners. But am I right in reading that the private property owner would not be guaranteed access unless it was in a access corridor? So that I think made rise to the question that came up. You know, I'd want to know more about, you know, how this is done. The net result would seem like that the access would be restricted, that the only way they could access might be, depending on future regulations, access through an access corridor, while that isn't on the books now. It's not necessarily a negative statement. I'm just trying to clarify my mind.
Representative Keller, through the chair, it's kind of handled two different ways in terms of access. One is that when the statute requires also that a management plan be prepared, and that plan might generally address access, or if there's any specific known needs for access, that may actually be spelled out in the plan, like as to how it goes. For access that we don't know about now, but somebody, for example, has a native allotment and needs access, they would still be able to come to us, and we'd have to coordinate with Fish and Game on what their route is, and that's really not a whole lot different than what we do even without the legislation. So, like I say, we would coordinate with Fish and Game anyhow in terms of trying to minimize impacts to habitat and animal migrations with that access. But it doesn't really restrict access. it actually kind of assures people that if they do have inholdings, that they would have some sort of access to those.
Okay.
Just to add to that, Mr. Chairman, I think from the Department of Law's viewpoint, we wouldn't read that as a limitation on access. We'd read that language as a guarantee. But you might check with the sponsor on what the intent was.
Any comment, Representative Herron?
She wants the name of the person. Kevin.
Nope. Yeah, I'm going to need, for the benefit of the recording secretary, to have people identify themselves. And just to be clear, if we have a sequence of questions between, say, somebody on the committee and a testifier, I won't ask you to identify yourself each time, but whenever we have somebody come online, separate from that, I'd like for you to identify yourself. So that was Kevin Saxby. And, Representative Kawasaki, do you have a question?
Sure. This is for Dick. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, the last person who mentioned something from Beth Lighting, his name was Greg
Rozichka,
mentioned a time where there was there were permits requested by the department. The department said no or something to that effect for coal bed methane. Can you explain the history of that and what happened in that situation, or do you know what happened?
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, this is Dick Miles. I'm actually not real familiar with that because it was an oil and gas leasing issue, and I don't know if anybody. There's possibly somebody from in the audience there from oil and gas. I'm not sure if they were able to make it or not. Is Heather in the room there? Or?
No,
she's not here, Dick.
Yeah, I can get an answer to that back to the committee.
I guess I'd like to know, and I'd like to go, Mr. Chairman, if I might, just that. If this bill were to pass and we set this into a reserve status like it is written here, does that make the bar higher when it comes to a person who wants to explore for coal bed methane, for instance, in that specific case?
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, Dick Miley is again here. Yes, it would make the bar higher because we would have to make sure that that is compatible with the purposes for the reserve. We would currently have to address fish and wildlife concerns, but the legislative establishment as the reserve would raise fish and game to a higher level. So if there was a conflict between hunting, fishing, trapping, or the wildlife management, we'd have to decide in favor of the fish and wildlife over the oil and gas exploration.
So, I guess the converse, Mr. Miles, would be without the reserve, and you wouldn't have to err on the side of fish and game? Is that...
Representative Edgman, to the chair. I think at that point it becomes more kind of their, I guess, considered equal, so we'd have to figure out which one is in the state's best interest, so it would be more of a site-specific thing. So with the legislation, we would, like I say, we would clearly have to favor the protection of the wildlife or the access to hunting or something. If you don't have the legislation, then it's more of a balancing act by the department. That's not to say that the fish and wildlife resources might not prevail. It kind of depends on what the impact is. And in particular, if the issue was like access for hunting or hunting access for hunting versus access for the oil and gas, for example, if they were actually in conflict, if you had the reserve, we'd have to err in favor of the or decide in favor of the access for hunting. Without the reserve, we may conclude that, you know, some restrictions on hunting might be in the state's interest because of the need for oil and gas or such. So it makes them, without the reserve, it's more of a level playing field between the two resources.
I guess my follow-up would be, Mr. Miley, from a practical standpoint, given your opening comments about the availability of sort of non-renewable resources, at least as the department knows at this point, from a practical standpoint, this bill, if approved, would essentially, I'm not attempting to put words in your mouth or anything, but this bill would essentially just sort of codify the natural order of things as they exist today. I mean, is that an unfair statement?
Representative Edgerman, to some extent, because our area plan actually says that the area is managed primarily for fish and wildlife and fish and wildlife and harvest of fish and wildlife. So we've already got an administrative direction to do that. So it wouldn't have a huge difference in terms of swaying it because we would look at the land use plan already for that. But I guess with the legislative direction, it gives it a little more. Probably the way to look at it would be that the legislative establishment would give it more permanence in terms of fish and wildlife concerns. Since our land use plans are administrative actions that can be changed and such.
Okay. If you were to break the entire 4 million acres down, and I'm looking at the map with the different color-coded designations, hydrological unit boundaries, native allotments, state land disposals, state mining claims, state-owned land in general, legislatively designated areas, what part of this whole 4 million acres might, quote-unquote, sort of be in play for mineral development might call into question putting this into reserve as a bill suggests. What percentage of this 4 million acres are we talking about? 10%, 8%, 5%?
Representative Edgerman, it's hard to put a percentage on it. The mining claims are shown up there, and it's, you know, I would say just looking at the map, it's probably less than 5%. So that's an indication of where people think minerals are. But I don't, you know, this area hasn't been that intensively explored. Same thing with oil and gas. I mean, it's considered low potential. You know, like if you had asked me the same question of Bristol Bay 20 years ago as to what I think the potential for minerals is, my answer would have been a lot different than it is today with, you know, discoveries of things like pebbles. So, you know, when you look at Alaska, a lot of Alaska, even though it's been combed over by miners for years, a lot of areas haven't been that intensively explored by more modern techniques. So, you know, there is always the potential in an area like this for finding something. But, you know, from what we know now, there's no known big mineral deposits anywhere within that 4 million acres.
What type of exploration would it require? Aeromagnetic mapping, or would it take any, what would the department have to do to actually get a better understanding of what might be out there?
Well, that would be one thing, the aeromagnetic mapping, and I think they've actually done that for some of the Taylor Mountains areas. I'd have to get back to you on the exact areas they've done that in out there. That's certainly one way to get more information about the hard rock mineral resources. In terms of oil and gas, it's seismic work. I don't believe anybody's ever drilled a well for oil and gas anywhere within the Holitna River watershed. The state, of course, doesn't do that. That's the private sector would have to do that, but they've never shown enough interest in that area to drill any wells. So, at least as far as I know, and I can get back to you again on with some more specifics about what areas have had the aeromagnetic mapping and whether or not anybody actually has done some serious oil and gas exploration out there.
Okay. Any additional questions for Mr. Malias or Mr. Saxby, Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and whomever can answer that. Is there any possibility of this being a natural gas pipeline corridor or a utilities corridor for electricity? Is it geographically located where it might be at some point when we do electrify or gasify our state, that this could be a corridor for transmission of that kind of utility?
Representative Johnson, this is Dick Bias. I could answer that partly, and the answer to that is for natural gas, I don't believe it's ever been looked at as a corridor because it's just not on the most of the natural gas people are talking about is either interior basins like around Nanana or obviously the North Slope. I do know this has been looked at as for electrical transmission corridors in the past. Some of the kind of hypothetical electricity ideas for Donlin and Pebble, for example, would be to link those together and then tie that into the rail belt somehow. And this actually, the Holetna River watershed is between Donlin, which is to the northwest, and Pebble, which is to the kind of south of the Holetna. So if you're ever going to tie those two together, which some people have proposed, it would have to go through this area.
Representative Herron, did you want to respond to that specific point?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Johnson, realistically, and Dick articulated it well, is the corridor, the natural corridor for the Kuskokwim would be on the north side of the Kuskokwim. And of course, this is in the south. One of those two points at the top is right on the Kuskokwim. So realistically, a natural gas corridor, say to run Donlin, would be directly from Healy over to above Crooked. So it could probably not impacted unless something was to tie Pebble and Donlin together.
Representative Johnson?
And so I guess my question would be, would this anything in this particular piece of legislation prohibit that corridor? Or add another layer of bureaucracy to the permitting of that corridor?
Mr. Miles?
Representative Johnson, to the chair, it certainly wouldn't prohibit it. It might add some requirements to the or stipulations, for example, to make sure that it minimizes its access or impacts on access for hunting or fishing or things. But it certainly would not prohibit it.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you. Thank you. The other question I have is, I don't see a physical note on this, but there are a lot of shells and will and studies in this. Have you prepared a zero physical note for this bill, or have you been asked to prepare a physical note for this bill? And I don't have it. I just got it. And it is zero. Are you sure? Well, that's from the Department of Fish and Game, but not DNR. Is there a DNR one, too? So do you have you prepared a physical note, or would you maintain it as being zero?
Representative Johnson, for DNR, we maintain it zero. The only action that actually is required is to do the management plan, and that's actually the responsibility of Fish and Game. But there's no actions that DNR has to take. There's some guidance, obviously, to the boards of Fish and Game, but even to them, those are actions that are, I guess it's within their existing authorities or things that they already do, so... But no, there's no fiscal note envisioned for DNR.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But we also, just on occasion, do get fiscal notes for things within the normal activities of departments. Just, it's not uncommon.
Yeah. Representative Johnson, for DNR, though, there actually is nothing we would actually need to do other than enter the Holetna River boundaries on state status plats, which is a routine DNR action, so... That would be the only actual action we'd have to do if the bill passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, once again, additional questions for Mr. Milius or Mr. Saxby? Is there anyone online or anyone here in the room who wishes to testify before we conclude the hearing today? If not, it will be the chair's intent to work with the bill sponsor to get some of the questions that came up today answered. And the likely scenario is that the bill will come up next week, and we will go from there. So not hearing any comments or seeing any reason to continue on, the meeting will be adjourned at approximately 12:42.
Other than the fact we like each other's company.
11:57. Did I say right 11:42?
11:42.
11.
That's all right. It makes us look like we're working harder.
Yeah. Felt like
it. Overtime.
It's not easy.